The book is The Pirates by George MacDonald Fraser. Chapter the Sixth. It was really rotten, down in the fetid, stinking, dim-lit orlop, where timbers creaked and rats scuttled, etc. Blood and Avery had been fettered wrist and ankle to facing bulkheads, which was uncomfortable enough, but to make matters worse, the cleaners hadn't been in, the straw hadn't been made up, or the scuppers hoovered, or the bilges refilled, and there wasn't any Kleenex left. To cap it all, the pirates had taken over the ship's intercom, and instead of the normal hymns and rousing sea shanties, the muzak now consisted entirely of dirty drinking songs illegally taped from Radio Tortuga. Avery bore it all in stoic silence, the chaotic mess of his tortured thoughts concealed neath a cold, imperturbable mask. But Blood griped incessantly. It was just like these swindling foreign tour operators, he said, to grab your money and then forget you existed. He should have read the small print when he came aboard, and so on, until even Avery's icy control snapped in one bitter denunciation of his fellow captive. "Hear ye, fellow," said he, and each acidic word was like a blade rasping from its sheath. "Wouldst be better employed making peace with thy beastly soul, for mark me, when this hand of mine is free again, its first task will be to wring the putrid life out of thy mangy carcass."
"What the hell are you going on about?" demanded Blood. "Is it my fault? We're stuck down here."
Avery's eyes flamed like 1,000-watt icebergs. "Base renegade, fink, and traitor."
"Traitor!" exclaimed Blood. "Me? Oh, for God's sake! You haven't got your galley gaskins in a twist over the measly crown, have you? As if that mattered. They'd have found it sooner or later, and if you had your way, we'd have been nothing but a couple of sharks' belches by now, which," he added unhappily, "is what we're liable to be anyway, unless you can sweetheart that big spade wench into a happier frame of mind."
"Do you think I care a jot for that, or even for the crown?" Avery's voice quivered like a trampoline with noble indignation. "Aye, though shame, ruin, and disgrace may be my merited portion, for as much as I have goofed up my mission and let the side down, what can I think on but my dear lady vanity?"
"Well, if it's any consolation, go ahead," said Blood. "Although what I always say is, there's a time to fantasize about blondes, and a time to think about getting the hell out of the mess we're in, and I'd advise the latter."
"I didn't mean think on her in that way, you carnal muckrake," snapped Avery, his teeth clenched. "Have you no conception of what her fate will be in the clutches of yon Moorish hell-spite?" And his voice grew all roopy with apprehension. "It may already have been. You know what such heathen do with Christian women captives. You've read the color supplements?"
"Oh, aye," said Blood carelessly. "Au pair milkmaids trapped in harem hell. And I was a 6-crazed sultan's plaything." He shrugged callously. "When all's said, it's just what happens to any married woman on her honeymoon. I dare say she'll be well looked after. 3 square meals a day, and that."
At this point they were interrupted by the little Welsh pirate, who, in his capacity as shop steward of the local branch of the Amalgamated Brotherhood of Piratical Operatives and Filibusters and Allied Trades, was eager to see Avery enrolled in that powerful offshoot of the Coast Brethren. His overtures our intrepid captain received with a befitting silent scorn, which the suspicious Taffy immediately misinterpreted.
"Them other bastards been getting at you, isn't it?" he demanded. "Them from the CBI, Cooperative Buccaneers International, and NUPE, Nautical Union of Piratical Employees, eh? You don't want no truck with them, boyo. The CBI is just a neo-fascist gang of bosses' blacklegs wanted to sell their bourgeois souls for so-called alleged professional status and a couple of expense account noshes at the Nombre Dios Hilton. Don't think, comrades, he went on with fine vehemence, that we don't know what goes on, backhanders from colonial governors and free weekends at Defoe Land and the Gallows Beach Country Club in return for alleged so-called productivity deals negotiated in direct and flagrant disregard of democratic decisions taken at forecastle floor level and ratified in Congress by card vote. Oh, we know. We may just be ordinary working cutthroats, but we're not bloody stupid, look you. He was really going now, full of pithead passion. And the other lot, just a long-haired bunch of Trotskyite hippies and so-called alleged students engaged in subversive activities which our union executive has condemned as totally counterproductive at this moment in time and diametrically opposed and prejudicial to the basic interests of true, loyal, grassroots piratical workers. You got no idea. At the intake in a Panama, we couldn't get near the Don's barricades for this unwashed rent-a-mob with their banners, Red Rory must be reinstated, and young socialist filibusters say no to Inquisition brutality. Bleeding troublemakers, and half of them on drugs and all. Now, brother, if you was to enroll in our shop... And such was the magnetic power of this little enthusiast's oratory that Avery and Blood dropped off peacefully in their shackles and slept soundly while he discoursed, all unaware that up on deck big things were happening. The pirates were putting Admiral Rook and the honest men over the side in small boats to the accompaniment of the gloating jeers and taunts with which they were wont to revile castaways on such occasions. "Captain Rackham and his crew bid you godspeed on your journey to the nearest port of call, which is about 1,000 leagues off, roughly, in that direction. We would draw your attention to the safety leaflets pinned to the thwarts and to the life jackets under your seats. The emergency exits are located all round the gunwales. For your comfort and safety, we advise you to row like hell and keep clear of cannibal-infested islands. Smokers, please occupy the seats on the port side." It was like the knell of doom to those unfortunates as they huddled in their frail craft, clutching their pathetic bundles containing toothbrushes, clean underwear, packed lunches, and customs forms. Admiral Rook, his face grey with fatigue and anxiety, shuddered as he gazed down on them as they fought for possession of headsets. How could he hope to bring this sorry band safe across the trackless waste of sun-scorched tropical ocean on 0.5 pound of yams and a pannikin of water a day, and not so much as a seasick pill among them? But he braced himself just like the stout old sea salt he was, and with his foot on the ladder he flung a last defiance at the sneering scoundrels who crowded the rail in the hope of seeing him slip and do a belly-flop into the water. "Thou vile pirate out of hell," growled he to Rackham, "if I have to swim home, yea, through seas of blood, yet shall I live to see thee swing and rot at execution dock. Ah, every foul mother-son of you, and that includes daughters too," he added, turning his inflamed eye on Sheba, who lounged, lissom as a great scarlet cat, on the rail, swinging a booted leg and idly tossing up and down in her gloved palm the jewelled cross which was her share of the Madagascar crown. The admiral's ruddy cheek blenched at sight of it, and his dentures rattled in dismay. "What have ye there?" gasped he with staring eye. "Recognize it?" mocked Sheba. "'Tis from the Jew-jaw o' Price, with which your gallant Captain Avery was entrusted. Aye, stare away, dotard. Your fine captain was not so brave and loyal, after all."
and she bared pearly teeth in railing laugh which curdled with dread the Admiral's circulatory system. "He betrayed it to us, along with your daughter's honor, as the price of his life."
"My daughter!" exclaimed Lord Rook.
He'd known there was something he'd meant to ask about, but what with one thing and another, it had slipped his mind.
"What, Hellcat? What of my daughter? What hast done with her? My child, my sweet vanity, where is she?"
"Think it over on the long voyage home," chuckled Sheba spitefully. "It'll help to pass the time." And with her foot she spurned the Admiral from his hold into the boat, and minced off, well pleased with herself. So while the boats pulled away, with the pirates crowing, "Bon voyage! Drop us a card from Antananarivo, and give my regards to Broadway!" Sheba slipped the precious cross into her pocket. Her exchange with Rook had been another step in her diabolic plan to enwrap our hero in her unholy toils, and now she was ready to apply the final touch, pausing only to freshen her lipstick and dab a touch of Prince Machiavelli behind each ear. She made her way down into the bowels of the ship. Thus it was that Avery and Blood, snoozing peacefully in their fetters, although the little Welshman had long since departed in a huff, were awakened by the intercom playing a sultry version of Big Spender with throbbing bongo accompaniment, and Avery opened his eyes to find Sheba regarding him with hot, smoky orbs, one hand poised on her hip and the other holding a pannikin of water.
"Thirsty," she breathed huskily,
but though his parched lips yearned for the proffered snifter, pride forbade that he should accept it from this evil virago. He averted his head in a marked manner.
"The time has come," continued Sheba in her soul singer contralto, "for you to choose. Speak. Will you be one of us? A free companion, a liberated spirit of joy and youth, a hellfire-roaring boy, owing service to none and duty to naught but your own sweet will, roving as ye list, seeking as ye choose, taking whatsoe'er ye wish. And believe me, Junior," she added throatily, swaying closer to give him the full benefit of the Machiavelli, and drooping her eyelids in wanton invitation, "I mean whatsoe'er. Will ye take all this," she crooned, "or..." She left it unfinished, her dusky face within an inch of his, lips parted as she awaited his answer with dilated pupils.
"Not a chance," said Avery crisply. "I think your proposal is perfectly beastly, and if you had the slightest notion of good taste, you wouldn't make it. I can't call you a cad, because you obviously aren't, but whatever the female equivalent is, you are it. Your behavior to Lady Vanity, an innocent young lady who had done you no harm, puts you quite beyond the pale, and the same goes for your frightful brotherhood. I wish you a very good afternoon."
"Can I say a word?" said Blood from the opposite wall. "I'd just like you to know, miss, that I don't associate myself with..."
"Hold your tongue!" snarled Sheba,
but her eyes never left Avery's face.
"Oh, fool and ingrate, what else is left to you? Death? Why, even in England they'd hang you, the man who betrayed his mission. That's what they'll believe. Rook believes it already. You can never return. Never!"
"I don't believe you for a minute," said Avery icily, his finely chiseled nostrils flapping in scorn. "And even if I did, it wouldn't make the slightest difference. It would merely add a minor task, that of clearing my good name, to the programme I intend to accomplish as soon as I have won my freedom from this pestilent ship. That is, 1, to rescue Lady Vanity. 2, to recover all 6 pieces of the Madagascar crown, stick it together, and see it safely delivered. And 3, to arrest you and your associates and turn you over to the authorities. And that, dusky beldame, is that." And he surveyed her with calm disdain. If he had had a hand free, he might have politely stifled a yawn. As it was, he curled his lip just a trifle and almost burped. Sheba felt her knees turn to water. What a man was this, to scorn her in the face of death, and talk as though his escape and vengeance were a mere matter of course. She couldn't let this one off the hook, she just couldn't. And he couldn't be insensible to her allure. No male between 14 and 90 ever had been. And she wasn't intending to let this one get into the Guinness Book of Records as the first. She heaved her bosom with a passion that almost did Avery an injury, and seized his face in her hands. "You big, gorgeous dope," she hissed fiercely. "Don't you understand? It's either join us or pop your clogs. I offer you not only life, but love. Don't you know what that means? Bliss and ecstasy beyond all imagining. Wealth, power, infamy, the seas your empire, the world beneath your foot, and me in a leopard-skin tracksuit. Why, think of the seasons that ye may see, when ye shall sing and swear, drink and delight, sack cities and slaughter men as your cake-makers do flies, revel in the spoil of nations, have monarchs and governors suing at your knee, and I ever at your side to transport you, delight you, attend your every whim, and always, always love you." She panted hungrily at him, and Blood made little whimpering noises and jangled his fetters in frustration as he watched and listened. "You shall rule this brotherhood," Sheba murmured. "Another Morgan, another Drake, another Douglas Fairbanks, yet greater than all these, a king of the world, and I your queen and slave." And just to make sure he got the idea, she kissed him volcanically, giving it her best shot, and not coming up for air until she felt sure that he must be thoroughly anesthetized. Then she withdrew, her eyes hopeful behind fluttering lids.
"You've been eating onions," said Avery calmly. "I think I shall have that drink of water after all."
His disinterest was unmistakable. In fact, he had found her embrace almost as disturbing as the first time. But now he knew her for the fiend she was, and by concentrating his thoughts on cricket, chamber music, and dill pickles, had again succeeded in remaining immune to her sensual charms. It had been a near thing, but the cold baths he had taken every day since childhood had paid off in the end. Sheba was thunderstruck. It couldn't be true. She, the unchallenged sex symbol of the Caribbean and Indian Ocean, who had been offered and rejected the loot of an entire plate fleet to pose for the centerfold of Mariners Only, whose likeness adorned every locker door twixt Portobello and the Philippines, she, given the brush by this... Nay, even in her mortification, she could not regard him as other than the ultimate dream dragon wrought him. But it was passing strange. Could it be that he was bent? Nay, for he had shown the most ardent interest in that pink and white cream puff rook. And on the thought, the fair sea queen yowled with jealous rage, for here was the explanation of his coldness. She gnashed her perfect teeth in fury and quivered in such frenzy of hate that her blouse creaked under the strain. "Right," she grated venomously, "shalt find what it means to spurn me, rash youth, of all the crust. Oh, but ye shall rue this day, thou insensible pillock. Sheba does not offer twice." And with that she turned on her heel, strode to the door, and there turned for a last gnash at the adored object.
Miss, said Blood hopefully, if you've a moment, I'd just like to say that I've been listening most carefully to what you were saying to that unnatural and ungrateful Burke of an Englishman yonder, and if he'd consider me as a substitute, why, I'd be more than happy to.
One more peep out of you, said Sheba balefully, and I shall have you lightly garnished with breadcrumbs and brought to a crispy golden brown in a moderate oven, after which we'll feed you to yourself, and you'll eat up every scrap. You read me, Paddy?
Her basilisk glance strayed from the thoughtfully frowning Irishman to Avery, lingered on him with a last passionate yearn, and then froze to cruel implacability.
You both go to the dead man's chest in the morning, she concluded, and stalked out, leaving them to ponder on that enigmatic threat.
The dead man's chest, eh? It didn't sound good, but then as Blood gloomily reflected, it probably wasn't meant to. You were probably as mystified as they were. After all, no one who has ever read Treasure Island is quite sure whether the dead man's chest was a seaman's portmanteau or the torso of a corpse, which in the context seems unlikely. In fact, the dead man's chest is an extremely small island, little more than a sandbank in the limpid tropic ocean, and it was thither that Avery and Blood were taken next day to be done to doom in fashion curious and lingering. For the pirates of those days were nothing if not spectacular and fatal invention, where you or I, if we wanted to dispose of an enemy, would simply blip him over the head or butter the stairs. The coast brethren got up to dodges you would hardly believe, like leaving tarantula eggs to hatch out in his tea cozy, or suspending him face down over the dreaded maguey plant, which has a nasty sharp point and grows 2 feet overnight. Eek! Or chaining him in an underground cellar with the tide coming in, which slowly raises a burning candle inch by inch until it smoulders through a rope from which dangles a glittering blade, which falls to break a vial containing acid, which eats through the lock of a box full of black mambas. The incoming tide will probably drown the brutes, but it's the thought that counts. Anyway, the pirates had devised an absolutely beezer way of giving people the business on Dead Man's Chest, as witness the crooked, weather-beaten crosses with which the long sand-spit was sprinkled, each marking the grave of some unfortunate who had perished there. While their ships rode the gentle swell offshore, the pirate captains lounged around the spit, watching as Blood and Avery were prepared for their demise. All was peaceful, save for the lapping of the creamy surf, the cry of seabirds overhead, the squeaking of Bilbo's boots, and the excited chatter of Happy Dan Pugh rehearsing his homework.
Ah, we find ourselves au bord de la mer. What jolly! Regardez la plage magnifique! Oh, Marcel et Denis jouent souvent avec les buckets and spades, les donkey rides, et le ice cream. Où sont les jolies mamselles en bikini formidable? Hubba, hubba!
And so on. What time Black Sheba prowled hard by, hand on hilt, her troubled gaze straying ever and anon to Avery, seeking some last sign that even at the 11th hour he would weaken and sign on the dotted line. Why, oh why, hadn't she worn her leopard-skin tracksuit for that last interview in the Orlop, instead of just talking about it? That would have reduced him to steaming clay in her hands. Too late now. He might have been made of stone. As calm and resolute, he awaited his fate. He and Blood had been brought face to face, each with his left hand bound tightly behind his back. In the free right hand of each, a rapier was now placed, hand and hilt being swathed in a tight bandage, so that in no way could either drop his weapon. Finally, to each right wrist was secured a hawk bell, which tinkled musically at the slightest movement.
Avery underwent all this with well-bred indifference, but Blood raised the roof with protests and Irish wheedles, all to no avail. The pirate simply grinned and ignored him. And now came Rackham, grim of visage, a massive figure in his spotless white. "This be dead man's chest, look ye. Where two may come, but only one goes hence," said he. "If ye want life, I must fight for it, t'other against each."
"Suppose we won't fight?" asked Blood brightly.
"Why then, bully, we bury you alive, right delicate," purred Black Bilbo, as he made dainty play with lace handkerchief. "Does it like thee better to stifle, ha? To suffocate a shifting, slithering, choking sand, head down, with feet a-waggle, most comical to see? If so..."
"Right, you've made your point," said Blood hastily,
and Avery curled contemptuous lip. "You'll fight, renegade," quo' he, "and die better death than thou deservest, on decent steel."
"Attaboy," croaked Firebeard, and leered at Blood. "He don't like you, matey. Vindictive he is."
"We have a boat, a punch in a water, and a loaded pistol for the survivor, if there is one, and he can get loose," said Rackham. "Goliath, put the hoods on him." And before our boys knew well what portended, tarred sacks had been slipped over their heads and made fast about their necks, so that they stood in musty darkness, armed but helpless, while the pirates fell about with cruel delight at their predicament. "You can't see, but you can hear the bells," said Rackham. "And remember, no hitting on the break, no talking in the clinches, no butting, and may the more meritorious contestant emerge victorious." Rough hands seized the two, as with raucous cries of "Roundabout, roundabout, roundabout, mouse, up a bit, in the wee house," the pirates spun them to and fro, and then released them to stagger blindly about the spit, their bells jingling. Almost simultaneously they pulled up and stood listening for the sound of each other's bell. Avery's tinkled softly, and Blood immediately lunged, but since he was 15 feet away and facing in the other direction, no business ensued. Then Avery made a sudden slash at empty air, and Blood, catching the jingle, rushed in his direction, but tripped and plunged headlong in the soft sand. Avery spun round and fell in his turn, and as they both scrambled up, by chance their blades met with rasp and slither, and they both lashed out at random in opposite directions, thrashing about in the sand. The pirates loved it, bawling with laughter and holding on to each other at the antics of their hapless prey. Even Black Sheba, concerned as she was for Avery, could not repress a smile as he came academically on guard, extended himself in a perfect lunge, and fell slap into the surf. Blood, meanwhile, was stumbling around, blaspheming horribly and tripping over one of the grave crosses. The callous ruffians egged them on and laid bets, but presently their sport was marred, for a sudden gust of wind ruffled the water, and there was general alarm as it was seen that the sea was getting up, while black clouds darkened the sky overhead. In a trice the pirates were into their boats and rowing for their ships, Sheba casting one last regretful glance where her dream man was sloshing about in the shallows, demanding in muffled tones that Blood should stand and fight like a man, since Blood was 20 yards away, trying to use his hopelessly swathed rapier hand to get his hood off, and having no luck, Avery was wasting his breath. It never occurred to our hero to try to remove his own hood, of course. That would have been cheating. Besides, the pirates had done their work too well. Eventually they started prowling the spit in search of each other again, with mixed results. It was grim work, though. Just put a bag over your head and try it. It's hot and stuffy, and the rustle of the material fills your ears. You can't see a thing, and somewhere close by a malevolent stinker is flailing about with 3 feet of razor-sharp steel. Not nice. And when you do hear his bells jingle, you haven't the foggiest notion where the sound is coming from. Twice they actually blundered into each other and flailed away at random without result. Then Blood took to crawling on his stomach, the skunk, jabbing fiercely in the hope of hitting Avery in the ankle. But this proved most uncomfortable, so he gave it up, and thereby precipitated the crisis of their deadly blind man's buff.
"I'm just about sick of this," he said, and added several horrid oaths.
Muffled though they were, they came to Avery's finely tuned ears, and he froze where he stood, waiting to catch the sound of the Irishman's next movement. Sure enough, there was the soft rustle as Blood climbed painfully to his feet, hoarse breathing somewhere to Avery's left, and more naughty words. "Swear away, Rakehell," thought our Ben, "'twill be your undoing." Very cautiously he turned, trying not to jingle, but as he slowly raised his hand for a desperate blind lunge, the bell tinkled softly, and Blood let out a yelp of panic and thrust out any old where. By sheer fluke, his point ripped into Avery's hood. The captain fell back, blinded by the sudden light, as the canvas was rent before his eyes. Blood steel drove past within an inch of his face, and then Avery had sprung away, jerking his head to free it from the torn canvas. Behind him, Blood was whirling about, lashing in all directions with futile bellows of, "I can see you! Stop trying to hide! It won't do you a bit of good!" And finally, losing his balance again, Avery waited until his opponent's frenzy had subsided and then said quietly, "Blood, it is I who can see you. I can kill you when I please." Blood leaped like a nervous ferret away from his voice and stood panting, his bagged head a-twitch this way and that.
"Pull the other one," he said at last. "That's a right sneaky public school gambit, that is. You want me to believe you and beg for mercy and give me position away? Well, it won't work, me bucko, for divil a word will I say, and you can go jump in the ocean with your dirty underhanded—"
Avery slapped him hard across the bottom with the flat of his blade, and Blood yelped and sat down. "Now, do you believe me?" said Avery. "That's my point at your throat." And he touched Blood lightly beneath the Adam's apple. The Irishman started, and then he seemed to go limp as he sat in the sand.
"What do you want me to do, then? Congratulate you?" he said wearily. "Go on, get it over with." He sighed heavily. "So it ends here. I will. If I've lived dirty, I can die clean. Make it quick."
Well, he wouldn't fool you or me, but the crafty rascal knew that in Avery he was dealing with Simon Pureheart, and that there wasn't a dog's chance that the other would take advantage of him, especially if he sounded game and penitent simultaneously. And sure enough, Avery was impressed. Cad though Blood might be, he was evidently prepared to take his medicine like a man. The chiseled visage of our hero quivered slightly and softened like a toasting marshmallow. He could no more have smitten his helpless foe than he could have wiped his nose on his sleeve. It just wasn't in him. He sighed in his turn and did the decent thing. He cut Blood's left hand free, and a moment later the colonel was tearing off his hood and regarding Avery with an uneasy, wolfish grin. For Avery, with his left arm still bound, would be hopelessly unbalanced if Blood chose to renew the combat. But before the colonel could make up his mind, the captain had turned to him a back, on which confidence and imperturbability and just a hint of disdain were writ large. "And now," said Avery coolly, "you may release me in turn."
"May I now?" said Blood, and his grin became wicked. "You're mighty trusting. What's to stop me running you through for the soft-hearted fool you are?"
"Don't talk rot," said Avery briskly. "I am the hero, and my survival is essential. You don't suppose that you can stab me in the back on page 107, surely? The ludicrous notion!" And he laughed lightly.
"Couldn't I, though?" said Blood, with sinister softness,
and for a moment Avery's blood ran cold.
"Oh, it would be unconventional, I grant you, but it would be interesting, and by God, haven't ye been asking for it just? I'm not so sure," he went on, laying his point gently in the small of Avery's back,
that your survival is all that necessary.
And who else, pray, is capable of rescuing Lady Vanity and bringing those pirate villains to condign punishment? Inquired Avery impatiently. Come, sir, make haste.
Well, I might make a stab at rescuing the delectable lady myself now, mused the rascally colonel. She'd be grateful, devil a doubt, and so would her old dad, and he's a warm man, they say. I might find myself a cozy little billet.
Lady Vanity wouldn't look at you, snapped Avery. For one thing, you're a bounder, and for another, you lack attraction. Your hair is receding, and I happen to know that she considers you pathetically old.
Old? Squawked Blood. I'm 29, damn your skin. Well, 33. Anyway, I don't bloody well have to rescue the choosy little bitch.
You wouldn't know how, and I advise you to refer to her with respect.
She can rot in some Randy Rajah's harem for all I care. I'll do all right on my own.
Without me to rescue you from your present predicament? Avery's shoulders were a picture of contempt, and the back of his neck radiated amused scorn. You don't know where you are. I do. You can't sail a small boat across shark-infested, trackless seas. I can. You aren't fighting fit, disciplined, intrepid, and decently resourceful. I am. Now get on with cutting me loose. I'm getting pins and needles.
It was gall and wormwood to that knavish soul, and Blood cursed quite a bit. But of course he had to give in the end. For one thing, he wasn't really rotter enough to stab a helpless man. Like Captain Hook, he had his own warped ideas of good form, and he realized that it would be the height of poor taste. Also, he had considerable doubts about his ability to even row a small boat, let alone navigate it. So with the best grace he could muster, he cut Avery free, and once they had got the bandages off their respective sword hands, Avery reviewed the situation. Far off on the horizon, the pirate ships were disappearing under the stormy sky. They might be, he remarked regretfully, beyond immediate pursuit.
And they can't stay that way for Mrs. Blood's favorite child, snapped the colonel. We're well rid of them, that Sheba,
and he shuddered at the thought.
But they're not rid of me, said Avery quietly. And Blood read in the intrepid set of his chin, the hard calm of his clear gray eyes, the stern purpose of his clear brow, the resolute tension of his knees, and the implacable poise of his armpits, a grim determination which was awesome. Those knaves have filched away mine honor quite. So much is clear from the words of that diabolical black female. Rook thinks I turned stool-pigeon over the Madagascar crown, and that I have betrayed his daughter. Don't ask me how. I must clear my name, and that means rescuing Lady Vanity, ere shame and horror befall her, and getting back every piece of that Sambo's tiara. To that end, I, Benjamin Avery, R.N., hereby dedicate myself. I'm going after those scoundrels single-handed, and by George they won't know what's hit them. And he strode down to the small boat on the shore. Blood cried out in alarm.
You're balmy! You're going to go solo after the whole Coast Brotherhood? Hold on, son, listen to your uncle.
And he laid a restraining hand on Avery's impassioned wrist.
Look, we've got the boat, and you being a dab hand, we can get to some fairly civilized port, right? Well, I hate to remind you, but Lady Vanity is probably up to her pretty ears in shame and horror already. And anyway, you don't know where they've sent her. Basra, Goa, who knows? As for the crown, what are insurance companies for? Damn it, it's in 6 bits. You can't hope to find them all, let alone recover them. I mean, try asking that bloody Firebeard or that supercharged Eartha Kit. Jesus! Now, let's you and me just take it easy.
Faugh! Cried Avery. These are the counsels of a poltroon.
Damn right they are, agreed Blood warmly. And I'll tell you something else. They work.
Stand aside, sir, said Avery grimly, and started rummaging through the boat. His seaman's eye assured him that she was seaworthy, and that, as Rackham had said, she contained a keg of water and a loaded pistol. Little enough, but sufficient for such as our intrepid captain. But what was this? Under the stern seat, a small box, which, on being opened, proved to contain a compass, Baedeker's for the Barbary Coast, Indies, and Spanish Main, good food guide, toothbrush, nail scissors, ship's biscuit, great store of book and beef, flask of Pim's number one, bandages and iodine, credit cards, and a bar of sunlight soap. Pinned to them was a note in a sultry, smouldering hand, and Avery's eyes narrowed as he read. "Oh, blind, oh, foolish, oh, beloved! I hope you are keeping well and that the weather continues fine. I write these lines and enclose them with store of necessities for your voyage, in the confident hope that you will easily master the creature Blood, whose death, as I trust, was slow and painful, though not as choicely anguished as I would have contrived given a leisure, and that your valour, godlike intelligence, and other super-duper qualities will bring ye to a safe haven with all dispatch. Give up all hope of succouring that finishing school milksop vanity. She is beyond all aid, and lost to you forever, and good riddance. 'Tis my belief she pads her bra, but no more of that. She is kaput, so forget it. My heart and body yearn for thee, thou gorgeous beast, but I will not sue nor plead. My dark star tells me we shall meet again on another island farther on, as we of the Brotherhood do say. And when that time comes, thou shalt be Sheba's, and she thine. Oh, pray it may be soon, soon, soon! You haunt my dreams, my skin prickles at thy imagined touch, my lips thirst for thee. I'm off my food, and if this goes on much longer, I'll look an absolute wreck. Oh, fly to me, barracuda baby, that I may rain kisses on thee as I do on this insensate paper. Yours sincerely, Sheba the She-Wolf. XXX.
Well, now, how do you like that, the vindictive hussy? Said Blood, who had been kibitzing. Creature Blood, forsooth! What did I ever do that she wants me took off painful-like?
I could almost pity her, mused Avery, his marble brow clouded. Poor deluded savage! It may be that she is more misguided than evil. After all, who knows what her environment was like? Underprivileged, wrong side of the tracks, no school lunches. Parents divorced, I shouldn't wonder. She may have had a cross nanny. His perfectly sculpted lips tightened. But her conduct to my darling vanity, ha! That I can never forgive her, never!
Well, she's done all right by you, remarked Blood, eyeing the box of goodies. God knows why, after the way you spurned her in the oarlop, and her claiming all over you. Tell me, he went on curiously, don't you find her just the littlest, teeny-weeny bit attractive? I mean, she's a human cobra, we all agree, but physically now, doesn't she get through to you at all?
Avery looked mildly surprised. She may be comely enough in a darkish way, I suppose. I had not marked it. She has a certain, how shall I put it, a certain
barumph, suggested Blood.
A certain bodily presence, I was about to say, Avery shrugged. And, as you say, she seemed eager to attract my notice. But then, all women do. I cannot think why. He frowned and crumpled the note, which Blood automatically trousered. But it shall not avail her. She goes into the slammer with the others, and to such retribution thereafter as her crimes deserve. Right. Help me launch the boat.
Thou art still intent on thy rash design, cried Blood in alarm. All that codswallop about going after Murder Incorporated, single-handed, I mean. You've thought better on it?
I have said, and I shall do, replied Avery coldly. But fear not for thine own precious skin, fellow. I crave not thy company, and if so be a convenient port lies in my way as I pursue these foul knaves, I shall happily be rid of thee. or you can stay here and wave your vest at passing ships." And he busied himself about the boat.
"You're bananas," roared Blood. "Not the full shilling. Harpic, ye great English goon, you haven't a prayer. You can't take on that mob."
And for some reason, in a slightly lame voice, he added,
"Alone?"
Avery glanced at him, and Blood leaned on the thwart, head down, and heaved a great sigh. Then he looked up as at a willful child, and shook his head with that sorry, crooked Irish grin of his, and while he looked, there seemed to be borne to them on the wind the soft strains of that stirring wild sea march that you know of old, which signals the moment when the rogue, old in craft and knavery, says farewell against his better judgment to selfish sense and cynical reason, and casts his lot for the nonce with honour and gallant enterprise, not from conviction, but because his bold contrary spirit cannot resist the call of venture and romance, for what is life without them? So with the music growing in his ears, Colonel Blood shook his head again, as one who marvels at his own folly.
"Ay me," he sighed. "Look you now, you're a likely lad, Ben Avery, and a canny man of your hands, I'll give you that. But damn me, you just haven't got the kind of sin and experience for the dirty work that lies ahead of you. What you need is the help and guidance of some bloody rascal who knows the wickedness of the world, and who'll see ye safe through it, more or less, not out of the goodness of his black heart, because he hasn't any. And he'll play ye false now and then, divil a doubt, but just for the hell of it, and a share of the profits, if any. Well, what do you say?"
He stood, waiting, while Avery regarded him steadily, not with any softening of those finely chiseled features, not with a hint of a smile, but after a moment he nodded. And if you had seen him, you would have liked him better than at any time so far. Whatever doubts he may have felt, he concealed them, and in that moment there was nothing priggish about Captain Avery. "Help me shove her off," was all he said, and they ran the little boat down over the shingle and into the surf, and then they were standing out to sea, with the music a thunder in a rousing crescendo, their tiny craft riding the salt waves in the sunlight, spray lashing bracingly all over the place, Avery bursting full of high endeavor, and Blood beginning to wish he hadn't come. Thus they set out on their desperate journey together, as you always knew they would. But of what befell them thereon is, as Mr. Farnall would say, yet to tell, for here endeth Book the First of The Pirates.
And there's no lack of good stuff on the slate for Book the Second, with our beauteous heroine to be rescued from her unspeakable fate. And if it's the first time she's faced it, you can bet it won't be the last. Our stalwart hero's good name to be cleared, villainy to be pursued with stern resolve and given its lumps, and 6 bits of crown to be recovered, where'er they are. Mayhap our dauntless duo will have to seek them in hair-raising exploits in all sorts of bizarre locales. Sheba's hideous gothic castle on Octopus Rock, with its infamous watercress dungeon, Rackham's shark-surrounded island lair, with that fatal and voluptuous adventuress Anne Bonny, the steamy dens of Madagascar, lost jungle cities where ethnic minorities practice their weird rites, the dank torture chambers or the hellish Inquisition with a curse, and so on. The options are wide open. Cannibals, mad castaways, suave and evil dons, poison darts, flashing-eyed senoritas, crashing cannonades, oodles of treasure, wild native princesses in feathers and fruit hats, dungeons, escapes, betrayals, rescues, and any amount of swordplay, aha! Boozing, singing, loving, good fellowship, and be damned. But the moon is up, the stars are bright, the tide's on the turn, the snail's on the thorn, and Book the Second awaits. We shall bring ye to the treasure-house of the world, and, as a famous real-life pirate once said, blame yourselves if ye go away empty-handed.